Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Phantom Galaxy. I'm your host, Nathan Bartleball, and I'm joined with...
Chris Durham. Very excited to be here tonight.
We are on episode Lucky 13
of All right.
Phantom Galaxy. And originally, this episode was going to be the H.P. Lovecraft episode. We're going to have that coming to you a little bit later in the week. But in keeping with all things goopy and strange, tonight we have a review of Alien Covenant. We'll do our normal thing where we do the spoiler-free review. And then the spoilers, but we're going to have that at the end of the episode. Before that, we're going to kind of do a walk down memory lane of all the Alien films. But when I say all the Alien films, I think we're going to avoid the Alien versus Predator is not going to be part of our... That would have been...
Now, if only they would do a Batman versus Alien versus Predator movie.
Well, you can see those short films online, which weren't too bad, you know, for fan movies. But anyway, before we digress too terribly much... Tonight we're going to discuss the Alien movies, but before that, Chris and I just got an opportunity, thanks to Chris, bringing over a copy, a brand new, day early copy of Injustice 2.
Yeah. I've been waiting for that one.
I know, and fortune would have it that I just bought a second controller for the PlayStation.
Perfect timing.
So you brought it over tonight, and... Man, it's pretty cool. For anyone who doesn't know, this is the... Chris, why don't you set up? Because you're much more familiar with the first game than I was.
Yeah, so it's like an alternate universe take on the DC superheroes. It takes place on another, you know, timeline. But it's basically all the superheroes and villains they smash together in these games fight each other Mortal Kombat style. Except less, perhaps a little less violently, because I think this game's rated teen.
Maybe no fatalities is a better way to say it, because it's still kind of violent. But
you're right.
No spinal columns I've been removed that I saw.
So they came up with a way to, and they've actually developed separate comic books and stuff they're selling now related to the games, and it's its own universe now.
Money.
It's crazy.
Money.
Yeah, exactly. I don't ever read the comic books related to the video games, because that always is just kind of a cash grab for the companies. They never seem to...
I'm sure they have their best writers on
it. Yeah. But I think this, they are trying to develop into a legitimate comic series. I don't know. I haven't read them, like I said.
Call Alan Moore out of retirement to come and write.
Well, speaking of Alan Moore, in Injustice 2, one of the characters you can play is Swamp Thing, which is so great. I love Swamp Thing.
I played a couple rounds of this before we... decided to record, and the minute I saw Swamp Thing, I just involuntarily hit the choose button. I couldn't even go any further.
You can't help yourself.
It's amazing. Yeah. I love he sinks into the ground and will produce logs out of the middle of the bayou to smash you in the head with.
Copies of himself.
It's pretty cool, and he looks... I played the original Injustice, and I remember the characters had nice design there, but man, I really love the design and the look and the feel of all the characters that I've seen so far. We played several of them.
This is one of the biggest lists of characters in a game I've played for, like, a fighting game.
And they have a cool take on them, too. Particularly some of these characters now have movie or TV counterparts. Like, they go back to the kind of classic roots. Like, Swamp Thing looks like you said...
An Alan Moore Swamp Thing, almost.
Dead on. And he has this one awesome... I don't want to go too much with people and play the game, but the scene where his, like... When he wins, wings sort of like wings.
Yeah, those are
made
awesome.
Out of mulch and like leaves and stuff pop out of his back. That was pretty impressive.
I'm just waiting for them to release a Constantine character so they can actually spar instead of just with words this time.
Yeah, but the fights are really cool. The gameplay is really super simple to kind of grasp. Even my son was starting to grasp a little bit.
Yeah, Johnny was doing pretty good.
My 5-year-old can grasp, but then I should be able to. Gorilla Grodd.
That's right.
And I like they pulled even the stable of like the Blue Beetle is in there.
Yep.
And Captain Cold.
Captain Cold.
Captain Cold's probably pretty proud.
That's a deep dig. Yeah.
I don't know if maybe Wentworth Miller has something to do with it because Captain Cold was on The Flash and he became kind of a fan favorite character there on the TV show. So maybe it was enough to push Captain Cold into the ring there. We also got the Black Canary and the Green Arrow and the Green Lantern.
And some obscure ones. I mean, maybe he's not obscure, but to me, he's Dr. Fate. I've never really
read much obscure, of him. Yeah.
But he looks awesome. Like a really cool character.
And then, of course, they got Catwoman. Really cool versions of Catwoman and Batman and the Joker and Harley Quinn.
Superman, Supergirl.
Supergirl I really like because her design doesn't smack of like the Supergirls on TV right now or necessarily the Supergirl that you see in comics. It was a nice sort of their own take. Like she has not a bob cut, but kind of a, it's a little bit less than shoulder length haircut and everything. That's cool. And some of the finishing moves are awesome.
Like, yes.
The Flash has a bang-up, awesome finishing move. The Super Green Lantern move, yeah. has a pretty cool one, yeah.
Let's not forget Aquaman, so far I think is my favorite because his is pretty crazy. You remember that
Aquaman's pretty cool. Yes, Aquaman's finishing move is probably the neatest. There's sea animals involved.
Sea creatures.
Poison Ivy has a great design. I really like and the environment's the gorilla.
And
city.
as Johnny said, she has little plant dinosaurs.
She does. It's just crazy. A lot of fun to play. And yeah. If you played the first game, this game seems like it's just a leap forward.
Yeah,
from that.
Absolutely. So, I love the first game, and I think I'm going to love this one. So
it looks, yeah, it's totally fun. I'm going to invest in a copy of the original now. Yeah. So my son was really jumping up and down and getting into it. And if you're a DC geek,
Zack Snyder should have taken a clue from this because he says, "Oh, how can you not have fun with Batman fighting Superman? It's going to be a fun movie, Batman versus Superman." I had no fun in that. I had a lot of fun playing Batman versus Superman.
At least
Injustice.
Let me actually be able to punch each other. You know what? We don't talk too much about this, but you bring up, you know, a good point is the design on those characters I love far more than any of the designs that I've seen on, maybe barring Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman has a pretty nice design in the movies. But the designs and the environments in the game, I could see what was happening. It wasn't so dark. But, I mean, it didn't have a drab color palette. The characters don't have drab. They don't look like they're wearing tires as costumes. It looked punchy, and it called back to classic DC stuff.
Yeah.
So, someone take note somewhere before we get the Injustice movie and a rehire Zack Snyder to direct it. Okay, so now we're going to discuss the Alien franchise. I think the way we're going to do this is just start with the first movie and move forward. We're going to talk about the first four that kind of form the Ripley saga, if you will. And then we'll talk Prometheus and Alien Covenant.
Cool.
Alien, still one of the all-time great horror movies in my mind. 1979. Imagine it that it's that old. 38 years old.
It's still
now.
Engrossing. Yeah,
it's still engrossing. Comes right at the end of a pretty interesting decade for science fiction, particularly if you think about space science fiction, because in 1968 you had 2001, which was a landmark watershed movie, and then 1977, of course, you had Star Wars, which was a watershed science fiction movie, and in that one you had the kind of big bang spectacular of Star Wars and the kind of introspective of 2001, and then along comes Alien, which looks kind of grungy and gritty and spooky, and sort of proves that no matter how far we go and to what expanses our ability takes us, we will always have reason to be afraid of the boogeyman.
Afraid of the dark.
Afraid of the dark, you're right. If we take people millions of miles out into space so they can run around in a fun house, essentially, from a scary thing in the dark. And it still, like, totally works. I love the original Alien.
Yeah.
And this is really the beginning of Ridley Scott's career. In a sense, he had a couple student films, and he had a movie called The Duelist. Have you ever seen The Duelist?
No, I haven't.
It was, I think, 1977, a few years earlier, Harvey Keitel and Keith Carradine. Not Keith Carradine. Was it Keith Carradine?
I couldn't tell.
I think it was. And the two of them are dueling sort of soldiers, French soldiers. It's an interesting movie. It's very visual. It gives a kind of sense of, you can see how we got the Ridley Scott that came down the pike later. But I don't think it was a real precursor. You would imagine that he would move from The Duelist to Alien. So let me ask you this, Chris. Which movie did you see first, Alien or Aliens?
Oh, definitely Alien. Yeah. I actually got to see them in order this time.
Oh, that's right, because you saw them probably a bit later, right?
I did, yeah, actually. And I started saw them, I think, actually with my folks when I was older. You know, like, my dad was like, oh, well, you know, I think you're old enough, we should watch this, you know, Alien. It's a great movie. Which was kind of weird for him to say, because he was always very kind of, like, protective about what I got to watch as a kid. But so we saw that one, and then, unbeknownst to him, I rented Aliens and watched it with my mom. And she was kind of freaking out because she doesn't like that kind of stuff. She does not like
horror. Aliens is super intense if you're someone who has not been around and, the block with horror.
I mean, I was in love, obviously, when I watched this movie. This movie was awesome. You know, it was one of my favorite things that I'd ever seen. And I told my dad, oh, we rented Aliens. It was awesome. And he got so upset because he's like, there's such a huge difference in language content from Alien to Aliens, where you're dealing with a group of colonial marines constantly screaming curse words at one another. You know, so he was not pleased with me that I did that.
Hopefully you didn't rent Alien 3 in front of him.
No, I did not, because that goes to a whole other level of craziness.
That actually, I think, pushes the line for even people that are okay with curse words.
I have gotten to a point where I consider Alien, one of the reasons I don't like Alien 3 is because it feels that the cursing is so prevalent, and I'm no prude, I don't mind that, but it's so prevalent, it just kind of feels lazy to me. Like, the script feels lazy to a certain extent.
Yeah, there's certainly some of the later films take a bigger, better, more perspective. And of course, I think one of the things we'll probably be talking about as we go forward in this is, and it's true really any franchise, the Alien franchise is something I love so much that I'm probably much more particular about it than other franchises. Mm-hmm. But it's trying to recapture something that worked so well the first time. And I will give Alien series credit. It always does try to do something just a little bit different than the one that came before. You put the Alien Predator movies on the side, at least the movies are ambitious. I think every single one is ambitious. But it's so hard, I think, to top the atmosphere that you get with the first movie. Because you think of how it even starts. Like, again, after you have 2001, the way the ships are introduced there, the classical music sort of bobbing mm-hmm. along in space, and then in Star Wars in the middle of a space battle, then the first shot of the spaceship in Alien is a big, clunky, chugging freight vessel. And then we're kind of introduced to what almost ends up being kind of like truckers in space.
Essentially, yes.
Yeah, I mean, you get this blue-collar kind of cast of people. These are not space explorers. They're not starfighters. They're a bunch of bored people who have done their job and are ready to go home.
Yeah.
And you get...
just want to get paid.
Yeah, and you get those opening shots on, again, it's kind of a grungy, rundown spaceship. There's mm-hmm. nothing like bright and shiny and new about it. It's almost like there's a real sense of the mundane at the beginning of Alien. Like, after you get past that really mysterious shot of, like, the edge of the planet and the letters coming up, mm-hmm. slowly appearing, which adds that sense of mystery where... And I was thinking about this with regards to Alien. I think there's a difference between mystery and not knowing something. You know, meaning in a horror movie, I haven't seen the monster yet, so I just haven't seen it. It's mysterious, I don't know what it looks like yet, but there's also something to be said that when you show me it and I still don't exactly know what I'm looking at, or there's still a sense of mystery about it, which I think a lot of that comes in the fact that they hired H.R. Giger to do the creature designs. In that first movie, when we first see it, we're still like, what is this? Like, they're still revealing it, doesn't really reveal it. Not in the first movie that much, particularly the first time we see it. But the directing is so strong, I think, on that first movie in terms of, like, everything. And Ridley Scott really, I mean, I don't like every Ridley Scott movie. I think we'll get to that with Alien Covenant, but I think he has proven he still has a very strong handle as a director, at least ability to direct scenes and to put things together. And there's some awesome scenes, particularly in the first Alien.
Yes, I really think he definitely took his time and was very careful about making this particular movie. And it more so than some of his later stuff.
Yeah, and I think it's one of the things being right at the forefront of making a movie that hasn't really been done quite in this way before. But mm-hmm. There are so many things that it seems to be drawing from. There's a couple of movies, I don't know if you ever saw them, Chris, of B-movies that it kind of does resemble. There's one called It, the Terror from Space that I always had heard, oh, because you have this creature kind of gestates and then it grows and it gets bigger and bigger and it's on the ship and it's basically a man in a lizard suit and it's like a 1950s movie. It's about at the same level as the Howard Hawks The Thing. I'd say the Howard Hawks Thing is a much stronger, creepier movie than It.
But well, I think the comparison is exactly right there when you're talking about the old The Thing from Another World or whatever. Like, in comparison to John Carpenter's later work, The Thing remake.
Yeah,
you know?
Which in a way owes a lot to Alien, I think. I don't think Carpenter's The Thing may have happened.
Because, I think you're right, because they had this feeling of dread and isolation in The Thing that you get in Alien a bit.
And you get, again...
Not so much the paranoia, I don't think, but...
No, but some of the sense of unease of walking mm-hmm. into a room and not knowing, again, what this thing is. A mystery of, what are we dealing with?
Mm-hmm.
which is handled really well. Most movies now, they race towards showing us what we're dealing with. But you know what I was also, I think, really strong about Alien as a movie, as it draws from these old like B movies. There's another one called Night of the Blood Beast, which I think I just remember the Blood Beast did a commando role in that one, and I think he wanted to gestate his progeny inside of human beings. So I think that was the Alien connection. But it's pretty bad. It was mocked on Mystery Science Theater, I think. So that's when you know you've made it. But in Alien, Scott takes that idea, and again, The Thing draws on that kind of the low-level worker guys that are kind of in this one place. They're just running through the daily grind. It's getting a little boring for them, and we start there, and then we introduce this sort of miraculous, strange thing. But what I like about Alien is it gives us a couple, like, hoops to jump through before we get to the actual monster hunting people on the ship.
Like, you're right, it does.
Because some people are like, oh, it's like Halloween in space. I get that. I see it as a slasher movie in space. I see how it's kind of a haunted house movie in space. Haunted house, I kind of prefer a haunted house movie in space to slasher in space. But you do end up with the final girl kind of scenario and everything there. But first you get the ship. They find that ship. And then they go down inside of it. And that's beautiful production design.
That was creepy. Yeah, that whole sequence.
Isn't it weird, too, because they're essentially at that point they're on a rescue mission, they believe. They get this distress call. They go down to the ship. And at that point, you almost feel like they're raiding a tomb. The way Ridley has set up that entire, like, the alien engineer, you know, the space jockey that they call him, that's sitting there in the cockpit of the ship and has the hole there in his chest, it almost feels like an ancient pharaoh or something, you know? And then you've got these eggs, which almost seem like booby traps set up there around. Of course, the implication seems to be either they were carrying these eggs or they got on board somehow and now they're all over the place. And that's really cool. And then, of course, the John Hurt character, Kane, gets infected. And then we have that scene where it leaps out. What did you know that was coming? Now, you had seen these movies years later. Did you know that was coming?
Yeah, because my dad, he was like, I think he had told me before the movie comes out, he was like, before we got around to watching, not before it came out, but before we sat down to watch it, he was like, there was this really creepy scene in here that, you know, you just think it's normal everyday life, and then all of a sudden out of nowhere, wow, we like, you know, so he really got into talking about it.
Got someone who's magic of this law when I was like, Alien, and you just tell
me. You just told me the greatest scene of that whole movie, thank you, without having seen it, you know?
And of course, there's the fact that Scott really didn't tell anybody what was going on, so he's filming a kind of normal dinner party sequence, and then this thing busts up, and you could tell by the look on some of their faces, like, that, yeah, they didn't know what was going on, the blood spraying right on their faces, and a little monster coming up. And that is a terrific, that's an awesome scene, obviously, and very creepy. And I think the problem is modern horror films you really have an analog for that most of the time. We very rarely go to a horror movie where we see a scene of that caliber that has managed to escape our awareness. You know what I mean? Our radar. You know, it's hard for me to think of something that would have had that level of that impact. Getting past all of the news and the reviews and everything we have this day, where someone just be able to go in and just see that happen, much like seeing, you know, the vomiting in The Exorcist for the first time.
It's impossible now, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it's... And then, of course, eventually we do get to where the alien is stalking people on the ship. And there's still some great stuff there, too. And the design, the way it looks metal and organic at the same time. And I think that's
that's
great,
a huge draw
that Geiger made that creature, because it does have enough mystery. I don't know if it has a mystery to sustain itself for 6 movies, but it has enough for at least a couple, and definitely the first one.
Yeah.
What do you feel, Chris, about how it like plays out overall? Like watching it after, and I don't know if you had seen many other horror movies at that point in your life, but even going back to it now, how do you think it stands up against other movies that eventually develop similarly? Movies like Halloween, movies where something is stalking people through a dark space.
Well, I think it stands the test of time, but I feel that you also have to kind of consider, like this is a go-to movie for a lot of people, and so for a lot of, like, if I were to go watch it now, I'm not going to sit there and probably be too scared by it because I've seen it enough times. So I think that it's really particularly effective for people, obviously, who haven't seen it yet, on the scares level.
Yeah, I think it's also very atmospheric though, which does. But give it does the
have
value.
Yeah, it does have a lot of atmosphere, and yeah, I could watch a movie multiple times in a row. It's not like that stops me from watching it. But there's other films that I'll watch that kind of still scare me to this day. You know, watching them, but. I just love the story as it is. It feels, at this point, less horror and more sci-fi with some horror in it at this point. Although it's definitely, the first viewing, you're just like, what is going on?
I think a lot of that's the baggage we have from
it's
the other
exactly
films.
Exactly so, baggage. But that's kind of, by the time I had seen it, it had been out for years and years and years.
Because I think it's horror movie first, but you know what? And that also brings us to a point that I don't want to move on about without talking, which is, the thing that actually probably freaked me out the most first time I saw it, because much like you, or actually I think it came on like Channel 54 or something one day, and I think I just mentioned something recently about good old Channel 54 was always playing movies, and they'd have it heavily edited, but not heavily edited enough that you wouldn't get the freaky moments. But I think they advertised the movie being on by showing that thing pop up and run across the table. So I already knew it was coming, and I think I'd also seen the movie Space Pirates with Robert Urich, where they had the space herpy, which was very similar creature.
Did you say herpy or harpy?
I want to say it was a space harpy, but I think it was a space herpy. Any listeners out there who have seen Ice Pirates, feel free to correct me if it is indeed not a space herpy. But, have you seen Ice Pirates?
I have not.
You should put it on your list. I don't know where you'll find it, but I'm sure it's on Amazon.
That's a problem. I would love to watch all this stuff. I just have no idea where to find it these days.
Amazon Prime has a lot of... It seems to be increasing its library of, like, schlock.
Which is a positive. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. So I bet you could find it. I don't know if you'd have to pay for it, but it's probably on there somewhere.
But who wouldn't want us to pay for Space Herpy?
You should get them for free. But in Alien, there's a shock moment. But there's really another one, which is when Ian Holm's Ash gets his head knocked off.
Yes.
And we realize that he's an android. It has been an android. And, like, they keep that bit hidden in the first movie, and they do a really good job with it. And it does set
Luckily, that was something my dad didn't ruin for me.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's legitimately surprising. It's too surprising. And to me, Ash was actually scarier than the alien. I mean, not as maybe a really little kid, but I saw Alien after Aliens. So I already kind of knew they were chest bursting, and it's hard to compete with the stuff that Cameron does in terms of, like, the intensity.
Mm-hmm.
So the one alien was nothing at that point, but Ash, with his head sitting there explaining to them in a very matter-of-fact, nonchalant way how they're all going to die horribly,
yes,
is pretty creepy. And Ian Holm really, like, sells it. He makes it very... He can play grandfatherly, but he can also play pretty sinister. And he was pretty sinister there. And it sets the tone, I think, not just for Scott Goes on to Blade Runner, but it sets the tone for the android element of the Alien series, which becomes kind of like, I'd say, the third most important element of the series. Like, if you figure the aliens, we've got the aliens. Most of the alien movies, I thought, until we dealt with Prometheus, Ripley is obviously a really big component. For the four movies she's in, Ripley is, you know, hand in hand with the aliens as, like, the big draw and the big attraction. Then I'd say the third most important element is the android component. The element of there's an android. There's not just an android in every alien movie. There's a purpose and a reasoning behind them. And I think Scott, maybe even more than the other directors, sees and understands that. You know, he wants to bring that element to the forefront, the android problem. I think in the first movie, it's really just a plot point, in a sense. It's to have one more shock. But it's set up in a nice way because the fourth component of alien movies is the corporation.
Always.
Yeah. So, yeah. Like, you get the... And in this movie, Ash is hand in hand and represents the corporation.
Mm-hmm.
So, one thing I want to mention here, because I think it's interesting as we move in... An awesome deal, if no one has it, is that Alien box set, that Blu-ray box set.
Oh, yeah. It's great.
It's awesome. There's so many cool special features. And if you're someone that for some reason doesn't know, almost every Alien movie has a crazy production history and a lot of interesting Easter eggs and deleted scenes. I think every single movie has a special edition or a special cut. I don't think any of those movies, the first four, have only a regular cut. So, Aliens has an extended edition, which is better. Alien has an edition that's been modified several times. There's a scene I want to talk about in that movie that's considered a deleted scene where Ripley eventually finds where most of her crew members have gone. And not all of them have been eaten. They've actually been sort of cocooned up on the wall. which mm-hmm. we're used to. Yeah. But what we're used to later
we in the series... We were not at that time.
No, and this is different because they're not carrying chestbursters. They're turning into eggs. They're turning into the egg sacs that birth the alien, that birth the facehuggers.
Mm-hmm.
And that ends up on the cutting room floor, which I think gives Cameron the latitude to do what he does biologically with aliens. What Cameron does with alien and aliens, like he decides to go the route that they have a queen, that they have a hierarchy, and the queen births the egg pods. This, Ridley Scott suggests in that scene that there's some kind of biological genesis happens that turns the human body into the egg pod that holds... Because there's clearly no queen on board mm-hmm. the Nostromo. There's just the one alien,
yeah.
and it's done something to them. Scott seems to... He's kept that scene in his mind, I think. I'll just leave it at that, like, as mm-hmm. we talk later about coming. But that scene was never explained, and I always wondered, are we supposed to have kind of two alternate paths here, you know? The aliens, they either have a queen and they're birthed through that process, or maybe it's both. Maybe there's two different... Maybe this thing is so biologically...
adaptable.
Versatile, that it can it's choose your own adventure when it comes to how it's going to recreate itself. So, aliens. What do you... Your thoughts on aliens?
Love that movie. It's awesome. It is one of my favorite movies, hands down.
And there's a reason that it's considered a superior sequel. I agree with anyone who says, hey, I like Alien a little bit better. I'm not going to say agree, but I can understand the perspective where someone says, well, they're about the same, or Alien's a better movie. But I just emotionally gravitate towards Aliens more.
Oh, yeah. Hands down.
And I haven't loved every single thing Cameron's done. I like a lot of his stuff. But Alien, I think, is just the one where he had the opportunity to knock it out of the park. An early stage in his career, he had the success of Terminator, and he just did it. I mean, he just knocked it out of the park. And one of the things that's cool is he kind of does what everybody hopes to do in a sequel, which is do the bigger, better, more, and
but
actually
does it
do
right.
it right.
Yeah.
And like, okay, we had the space truckers, now we're going to get the space marines. But he draws on a lot of imagery that you would expect in like a Vietnam War film, or more appropriately, a movie made in the 80s or 70s referencing the Vietnam War. But he has that kind of gung-ho sort of
big time.
Miasma going on. And it sets the tone, too. Just like Alien set that tone, Aliens comes along and sets a tone for action movies that just runs rampant throughout the 80s. Mm-hmm. I mean, Predator is what it is because of Aliens. I mean,
undoubtedly.
Really, like, that whole tone and feel and a lot of the action
machismo.
Yeah. But with that machismo, it's interesting that still Sigourney Weaver is the very center of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And she has her own machismo.
Yes, she does.
Female machismo. But she also is allowed to be a female character. Mm-hmm. And she has nurturing elements. And she kind of ends up being the figurehead of everybody. And nurturing even the not just the little girl they find, but when the Marines like Hudson start to break down a little bit, they have someone who they can rally around. And it's Ripley. Like, mm-hmm. Ripley's a pretty well-formed character who still has a lot of her own psychological baggage because she's Survivor Girl the first time, but now she chooses to go back and be a part of this to confront this thing. And, man, like, it's just... That's one case where production design and special effects and just, like, laying it on and
slathered it
on,
yeah.
just really works. Those action scenes are still great. I can watch this movie... I watch this movie on an annual basis. I see it at least once a year.
It's great to the transition of type of movie. I mean, like, undoubtedly it still has horror elements, but it really went from horror to action movie with this one. I mean, it's
still... And you're right, the transition is seamless. And it also ramps up the science fiction element.
Yeah,
you say, it definitely goes from... If the first one was a sci-fi tinged horror film, this is a horrific science fiction movie.
Yes, absolutely.
And you get a lot of great vistas. You get a lot... Also, Cameron, who is kind of a junkie when it comes to the tech part of things.
Yeah, he is such a nerd.
He spends a lot of time, though, introducing you to tech, like the loader. Mm-hmm. And we see how the ships are flown. There's a really sense
We're going
to
see that later again. You know,
yeah.
like it's like almost a wink-wink to the audience.
But there's a lot of practical building up of you're watching the people do the job. You're getting a feel for all the tech and the weapons. Mm-hmm. There's scenes where they learn how to shoot the guns. And it's just... Very fetishistic, you know, in a lot of ways that they have those scenes. The corporation comes back with, like, the smarmiest, slimiest performance
yes.
by, what's his name? Paul Reiser.
There you
Paul
go.
Reiser's character.
Yeah, Paul Reiser.
Who, the characters, I love, like, I like the characters in Alien a lot. Uh-huh. I love the characters in Alien.
Well, because in Alien you got them and they weren't fully fleshed out. They didn't really have enough time to be fully fleshed out because most of them were just going to be there to be taken apart, essentially. I mean, like, you got some character development with them. But I think in Aliens, they definitely took the time. They had the time to kind of develop each of the people a little bit.
Just yeah, enough to make them, you know. It's a pretty darn long movie, and they don't really waste... They don't waste momentum, and they don't waste screen time, mm-hmm. but they do build them. I mean, Jeanette Goldstein's character is so great. You know, Hicks and Hudson, all of those characters. And Newt, too, like, such a good performance from Carrie Henn, who never really went on to do anything else. But she's kind of... She's almost close to being a Dickensian waif, but she's pretty good. Much, she has a lot of good lines, I think.
Like, that's the thing about it, too, is... It is an action movie, it's a horror movie, kind of combined, sci-fi, but it's got a lot of heart for those sort of things. Like, there's a lot of development between Ridley and Newt, like you said, nurturing, motherly qualities, like, a lot of nice moments between them. Like,
yeah, it is no accident that Sigourney Weaver was nominated for Best Actress for this movie. Now, I think she should have won, but nominated, and in the 80s, that was probably a big thing. You know, people just didn't
get
nominated for this sort of movie, unless it was for special effects or makeup.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the other big female character being the alien queen, who in her own way has the same motivations as Ripley. She wants to protect her family and wants to, you know, get vengeance for the horrible massacre visited upon.
Yes.
But man, that's a great design. That Stan Winston, the late great Stan Winston, just an
Have
awesome...
you seen any really truly great creature designs like that ever again? Like, to me, that kind
of
stands
there
out.
There were some
brilliant.
More, but most of them were done by Stan Winston. I mean, Predator, the dinosaurs and Jurassic
Yeah, but I mean,
Park.
Even that stuff, like, I think the Queen Alien may be my favorite of his designs.
It's one of the best big creatures, meaning... creation of that size to physically be able to put it on and get it to do what you need it to do without CGI at this point, mind you.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Prior to that, and it has a realness and a authenticity to it that a lot of the others don't. No, it's just an awesome piece of design. And it really has the opportunity, though, to end up being another of those things where I don't know what I'm looking at, you know?
Yep.
It's just a bunch of spiny legs and points, but it has such character to it. And it kind of precedes the Tyrannosaur in Jurassic Park, the way it moves and things that it does. It's sort of lurching down hallways. I mean, when it's just one of my favorite scenes of movies, period, in just terms of the visceral kind of creepy chill that I got, is towards the end. Of course, we know that there's the big loader fight, but eventually the loader falls down and has pinned the mother alien, the queen, against the hatch. Mm-hmm. And all Ripley has to do is hit the hatch to knock the alien out. But while she's there, the queen is wriggling and flailing, and you just see this squirming mass of arms and tendrils and her head rocking back and forth. And it looks for all the world like Sigourney Weaver is over this real giant insectoid thing that they pinned under a... I mean,
you
it's
actually
by
get
far...
a feeling of intelligent malice or hatred.
I think I love the scene where she operates the elevator. when the elevator goes back up and she's in it. But when that thing is under there, it looks to all the world like I'm looking at a real animal. But man, just a good movie from beginning to end. And I'm not even talking, this isn't even just nostalgia talking. I've watched this movie again.
It's great. Yeah.
And then to go back very briefly to Bishop, Lance Henriksen's like Bishop character is one of the real highlights. And I think this is where it's Cameron that makes the android element a thing, if you will. And I think it's interesting because Bishop is so very different than Ash. But Bishop kind of embodies the three laws of robotics, the Asimov laws of robotics. If you think about it, his primary operating is, you know, do not let harm happen to humans. And the way he interprets that in some of his own ways makes him a character that you like, even though he's also an android. You know, you see him making some of those choices. And I read it, there was an anthology that came out, I think, this last year called Alien Bug Hunt, which is a collection of short stories about aliens. Mm. And someone had written a story called Broken about what Bishop did right before he joined the team of Marines. Huh. And you see him responding to his initial programming and what he does. And it's very interesting. It's a pretty cool short story. But I think Bishop, some of what happens with Bishop, I think, is definitely coming off of Ridley Scott's Blade Runner, though. So it's neat because it's kind
of a
symbiotic thing.
A lot of conspiracy theories about like how they all tie together. Like,
well, yeah, and I don't even mean there's that, but like Ridley Scott had obviously much less influence on Aliens. He wasn't directing it or writing it or really anything. But if you look, I feel like Bishop though is still that idea of the more sympathetic android is kind of coming off of Blade Runner a little bit, because I can't think of too many movies that had that achieved that level of vision when you're talking about the artificial person. So it could have ended the series right there and I'd be perfectly happy.
Yes.
And they did for a long time. We went a long while, really, I think. I mean, that was 1986 is Aliens, I think, 85 or 86. And then we don't really get another one until 1992.
It took them a while, and yet they couldn't figure it out.
91, 92 is where you start to get.
I would say this is okay. So with Alien 3, I don't like think this is a really bad movie or anything. I just it's my least favorite. I'll say of the series. There's none in the series that I like really hate or anything.
No, this is a series that so far has managed to not produce a movie that I can say legitimately that. I just don't think it's good.
Again, free of Alien versus Predator.
They're not part of the series. They are not really. They just took some characters we liked and crapped on them.
Yeah.
Yes. So those movies aside.
Yeah, this is one I like pretty much the least. I have to say, honestly. Like you've told me about some of the original ideas, and those original ideas were cool. But they just couldn't manage to make them happen or mesh together.
We got the least interesting version of some of those ideas.
Yeah.
One of those was a script by William Gibson that actually went a completely different direction. But it suffered from the bigger, better, more. And I think at some point in that script they had like 10 loaders fighting 10 mother queens. I mean,
which is so weird because this movie is like the opposite of bigger, better, more. And that's
ultimately where I think the budget enticed them to have to go the other direction. But Gibson's script centered on Hicks. Hicks was the main character. So Michael Biehn would have been the main character. Mm. Bishop is also a main character. Ripley and Newt are kind of sidelined for the story. Mm. They're not killed, but they're sidelined. And it was an interesting script. William Gibson, who's done a lot of cyberpunk stuff. It's out there on the internet. You can find it, read it. It would not have been a great movie. I think a lot of people would have enjoyed it more than the Alien 3 that we got. The Alien 3 that was in production at one point was going to be done by Vincent Ward, who had done a lot of really weird, strange New Zealand. There's a movie called The Navigator, which I think you sat down and watched a movie once, where a bunch of medieval monks trying to escape the bubonic plague dug a hole that led them up into modern-day New Zealand. And they also did a movie called Map of the Human Heart, which I think actually may have come out after Alien 3. But I'm not sure what a Navigator suggested to them that he was the right guy for an alien movie. And it kind of shows because his idea was to set it on a planet made entirely of wood. An artificial wood planet that was really a giant space monastery that monks lived on. That sounds cool, weird idea.
Yeah.
And so he wanted to configure the classic alien as a dragon. You know, he comes to the planet and these monks have to fight it in the same way that a bunch of monks might have to fight a dragon in a medieval time period. So that could be a fun movie. They made a movie like that called Outlander. You can go see it. That's Viking.
That is awesome.
But I always think in my head that maybe that's what they were going for. But eventually you get the prison planet, which looks like the grungy, lived-in sets that are in every sort of like sci-fi, gritty sci-fi movie from the 90s. Mm-hmm. And this is when we were trying to make sequels. We had sequels to Trancers and Beastmaster and Highlander. And they were like, let's do another alien movie. You know, the Terminator 2 probably spurred a lot
definitely.
RoboCop 2 and Terminator 2 is really the only sequel there that was worth its salt. I agree with you. I don't dislike Alien 3, particularly in its director's cut. I think it has a lot to offer the Ripley story, but it's not where I wanted the story to go. And this is not the first time you're going to hear me say this in this episode, but this is not where I wanted the story to go. And as a result, I can't say that I really liked this movie all that much because it just kind of turns me off a little bit.
Yeah.
To be perfectly honest, I'm looking at all these grimy corridors. It's a depressing-looking film. It doesn't have the beauty of the other movies. A lot of shadowy shots of people just dropping the F-bomb. I mean, realistically, from weird angles, but not even beautifully contrived weird angles. Not like a Terry Gilliam movie, just like a weird angle. Like, I'm looking at the bottom of your foot, you know? And the performances are all pitched at this one level of grimy noir. You know what I mean? Kind of Charles Dutton is in the movie, but he's not that interesting. Charles Dance is in the movie. He's not that interesting.
Peter Postlewaite.
Pete Postlewaite is in the movie. He's not that interesting. Those three guys are interesting actors, but they aren't given much to do except run around and curse.
Yeah.
From the alien. The alien's not very interesting.
No.
It runs up walls. It does things. Sigourney Weaver gives a great performance, sans hair. What she's given to do is really sort of melodramatic. Like, she almost goes through, like, all the steps of grieving, you know? It's like, if you look at this movie, this is the steps of grief. Acceptance and bargaining. And at one point, she's there with the alien, and she says something like, I feel like I've known you my whole life. And I'm like, dude, I'm starting to feel that way, too. And the Alien 3, it's interesting in places. It's not a hack job, but it just, it doesn't, if this had been the first movie, I'd not be interested in watching sequels.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think, I don't know what more to say than that.
I agree. I think that's absolutely accurate. Like, that's one out of the series that, if I'm going to go through the series and watch them, that's the only one where I'm just like, I really have to just slog through this in order to say I've watched all the movies. Like,
it's got some good scenes. The scene when they kind of set the trap up for the alien is a fun scene.
I think the alien looks awful in it, too. Like, it does.
It's not great. It's a weird combination. Yeah, it's early CGI. It has a couple scenes where it looks decent. It's primarily very goopy. It's too small, for one thing. It spawns from a dog, so I get that. And I know that they have less weapons, but the downsizing doesn't work. We watched two scarier versions of these creatures in two other movies. Mm. And this is... It looks like a doggy running down the hallway. Sometimes.
Alien pups,
yeah. Yeah. So, I don't know. It doesn't capture my imagination. And it's a very depressing movie.
It is.
I don't mean just emotionally. It certainly is that. But it's depressing because it just lacks a sense of imagination. I don't mind a dark film. But this is a dark movie.
It feels like
it's slogging through
things. It has no soul to it.
It's trying to have a soul. It's trying to be about Ripley and her overcoming things. But it does. It plays at such a moody level that I'm not sure it quite gets there.
Yeah.
Again, I admire it more than I like it.
And you were right. The director's cut of it is like 30 minutes longer. And it makes...
And a much better movie.
I think it's a much better movie, but still the least of them.
It connects the emotional coordinates of where they were going with Ripley enough that her story does matter.
Uh-huh.
I think that they end her story very melodramatically. We didn't need a Christ shot of her grabbing the alien and falling into the fire. Another brief thing to talk about is, so we get this idea that Weyland is actually, that the Bishop models are based off of Weyland. Charles Weyland
shows up.
And that's a kind of an odd thing to throw in there. I guess it's to give Lance Henriksen a little more screen time. Mm-hmm. I didn't think it amounted to anything, per se, at the end of Alien 3.
Not at all.
It only confuses things a little bit more now as the whole thing's come full circle. I think one of the kind of problems with Alien 3, it comes right there, like, that point when I think producers and studios thought sci-fi was dying a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
They'd go more towards an action movie than not. And, I don't know, the decision to kill her off and kind of, like, bury the franchise, isn't that kind of what felt like watching the movie?
That's exactly
the worst thing, burying the franchise. You take away the happy ending and the autopsy of Newt, like, I didn't need that. I didn't need to see shots of dead Newt.
Yeah.
Like, in the beginning, the first few seconds of the movie, it's going to be dark and gritty, guys. I didn't need to see Bishop laying blown to smithereens on a junk pile or anything like that. It's not that I don't mind a dark movie. The movie just didn't earn them. And then it seems like you're watching them kill a franchise you like on purpose, and I just spent money to do that.
Mm.
And then, that's 93, 4 years later, suddenly sci-fi is starting to hit an uptick thanks to, I mean, let's face it, probably thanks to Roland Emmerich's Independence Day. I mean, Alien 4 has probably already started, but you know, around that time, you're starting to get renewed interest in science fiction a little bit. And I think at this point, George Lucas has already announced that they're doing Phantom Menace. No one knows yet. It's going to be it's going to be cataclysmically bad. But you know, the interest in sci-fi is starting to generate and pick up speed again. And so now we have Ripley's going to come back. How are we going to Ripley back? Because she incinerated. She was melted into nothing.
This is something I still do not understand.
Okay. There must have been tons of different ways to get to this point. I can't think of them off the top of my head. But what happens in Alien Resurrection is insanity. At least, just to get a deal, if you think of any way anyone's ever sat down and tried to think of how do we get a character back. Oh, he was a clone. They had amnesia. Whatever you want to think. I don't think you've ever seen 200 years later, they remove her DNA from the smelting pits. And
how?
And clone her for the purpose of bringing the alien embryo in her body back. Maybe you should pick someone who didn't thrice destroy the company's attempts and bring them back. Better yet, why don't you use a body that eventually that had an alien in it at one point? What did that point Newt or Hicks or anybody's body do? Why does it need to be Ripley? Well, it has to be Ripley because Sigourney Weaver is the only one's going to sell the movie.
Yeah.
And I'm not mad that she's back. I don't even care that that's the explanation, but it's weird.
It's set
200
dumb.
Years later for almost no reason. I don't know if that gap was so we could make more sequels, but that's a big gap. And the ships don't look any more amazing. There's not a great level of technology jump. They still look like the grummy old ships from the old movies. And Alien 4, man, I was so excited for this when it came up because there have been Aliens... was a franchise I loved. I had just gotten out of high school, and it was being directed by Jean-Pierre Rounet, who did City of Lost Children, Delicatessen, two movies that I was just really mad about at the time. Just thought they were fantastic.
They are.
Yeah. Joss Whedon was an up-and-coming screenwriter at that point who had done this little show, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which was headed into its second season and was showing a lot of great promise. He had just worked on the script for Toy Story. I'm like, it's got good... Ron Perlman was in it. Ron Perlman.
Who, a sign of quality. That's right.
To me, at that time, I love the Perlman. But this is before a lot of people were as familiar with Ron Perlman. I mean, there was every reason for it to, you know, hey, maybe they've knocked this out of the park. And now that being said, this is a hot mess of a movie. But now that also being said, I still really like it, kind of.
It's still a fun, silly movie,
96, 97, and I think you and I probably mentioned this tons of times, was this great kind of renaissance of B monster movies.
Absolutely.
Mimic, Relic.
Relic, totally.
Anaconda, Deep Blue Sea a little later on, Deep Rising. And the middle
of I still love watching Deep Blue Sea from time to time, I'm not going to lie.
Oh, I love watching all those movies. Oh, every one of those movies I mentioned that I still watch on a semi-regular basis. But Alien Resurrection is still a pretty... to me, it's a fun, wild carnival ride of a movie.
Yeah.
It's not deeply original, but I would still say it still tries to be rather ambitious. I mean, the 200 years cloning thing alone is insane. Brad Dourif plays a crazy mad scientist.
Yes.
It's interesting because the Alien 3 script that we talked about that Gibson did dealt with a military base doing experience on the alien and it going horribly wrong, which is essentially what you get in Alien Resurrection. Mm-hmm. Alien Resurrection... did you see this, Chris, in theaters, or did you see it when it was out?
I did not get around to seeing it until after it was out of theaters. I probably saw it a few years after it came out of theaters, because at that time I still hadn't seen the original.
Like, what did you think of it when you saw it?
I just, like you, I enjoyed it as a kind of a silly romp, fun, crazy little carnival ride. I mean, it was enjoyable, but they definitely had some flaws. I mean, but it was still fun.
Yeah, the plot's ridiculous. The basic plot is ridiculous. Yeah. It's also odd because doesn't it feel like it's trying in some ways to be all three movies at once?
I could see that.
Like, the way that Hunet, who has a lot of really weird visual stylings, and he brings all of his, like, designers over, mm-hmm. it has a very French sensibility. But it kind of reinforces that haunted house feel. The ship spaces in this movie are creepier, like the ship spaces in the first movie. And I think visually they're much better looking than Alien 3. For one thing, the set's not so dark you can't see anything but, like, bald dudes holding a light. So there's that creepy mise-en-scene of everything. There's also... the aliens are kind of goopier and more biological. There's more, like, creepy, weird...
a lot more drooly.
Slime. Yeah. I believe the opening credits come over just pooling slime. And there's a lot more weird biological distortions in this movie, too.
That you
get with... Ripley at one point, the thing they removed from her chest is an alien queen, mm-hmm. but that alien queen, when it eventually gives birth like a human being with a big gross womb, vomits forth something that looks horrible and really disturbing, kind of like a big human alien baby hybrid or something.
Yeah.
Like that, the biological horror of the first movie is kind of reiterated in this one, so you mm-hmm. have that element. you definitely have the ragtag band of, like, warriors that was aliens. You try to have that wild, barreling sense of action.
I love Perlman's just, like, channeling an ape in this
movie. And the first time you see him on screen, he's up on deck throwing a knife at Dominique Pignon or something like that. It's crazy, like, all the kind of loops that the movie goes through. And then, I think, just like the third movie, it's trying to be a psychological portrait of Ripley. Yeah, it's trying to be that. I'm not sure if it's 100% successful. But there's some scenes that really do work even in that regard. Mm. I think the big problem in Alien Resurrection is they give her Winona Ryder as the android to play off of. And I think that this... So, you know what? I take that back. So, 3 really didn't have an android component except for the fact that Bishop is back briefly. So,
yes.
But 4 kind of brings in Ryder, and we're supposed to not know she's an android till about halfway through. She doesn't do anything interesting with that role. I mean,
at all.
I don't think she's a bad actress, but she's not being stretched at all.
At all?
I mean,
no.
She might as well have been in How to Make an American Quilt for all that she was... For all that she was interacting with what was going on around her, I thought Weaver was great. I thought she did a performance in its own way that was almost as good as...
Oh, it's totally different.
Yeah. Better than Alien 3, where I think they just... She had so much drama she had to play that it was almost... It just overcame everything. But I think the role she's playing here is such a weird one to play. How do you play, I'm part alien now? You know, there are scenes where she's sniffing out her baby to know where it is and cavorting with the aliens in what might be a weird alien orgy.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know that's what's happening, that's not what's happening. Just really strange. And, like, again, when the baby shows up and she's interacting with it, and, like, her acting's fantastic. What she's doing in the scene's utterly ridiculous. But there's one scene that I love that really stands apart to me is when she goes into a room at one point, one of the rooms of the space station where the military experiments have been conducted, and finds all the Ripley attempts that have come before her.
Yeah, that was
her.
A weird scene.
It's a weird scene. It's a scene that in some ways is mirrored. I think there's a scene in Alien Come that almost mirrors that a little bit. That's all that I will say. Mm-hmm. It has, there's some, I saw that scene and thought of this scene. But it's a cool scene because it also mirrors Aliens, where she comes to one of the tables and the thing on the table, which is part Ripley but also part alien, that everything's got mixed up the way it should be, because you shouldn't be able to clone somebody and have the perfect alien inside.
Yeah, exactly. That's just ridiculous. Come on, guys.
But the thing is screaming, kill me, which is very similar to the first time they find the first colonist alien.
That's
so
true.
It's like very similar kind of sequence. But I think it's just a lot of good fun. The alien baby is a kind of a weird thing to deal with. The way it dies is one of the most needlessly gruesome deaths
I've ever seen,
where I believe the hole breaks in the window that's about the size of a pinprick, and this little thing screams as it's being pulled bone by bone and meat by meat out of the window until it's just a big pile
vacuumed
of, like, trash that kind of, like, skin that pulls
condenses
up on itself and tears off the skull, and then the skull pulls through, and the whole time it's looking pitifully at Sigourney, like, why would you do this, mommy? It's very, very French.
Yes. Yeah,
but that being
particularly the orgy scene, as you said.
Yeah, well, again, we're probably overplaying that one a little bit, but I liked the movie, and I would have watched an Alien 5 in that series.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know
why
that we're going to get one, obviously, now. Not that Alien 5 that we were going to recently get that Neil Blomkamp was working on. I don't think that was...
That was going to take place in South Africa.
in another apartheid squalor camp.
You have Di Edward teaching aliens how to be gangsters and stuff.
Something. You're probably right, Chris. I thought originally, though, I heard it was probably going to take place. It was going to ignore 3 and 4. But anyway, I ignore 3 and 4. They exist. A good point, though, before we go into Prometheus... Aliens, the aliens themselves in Alien 4, they do a couple interesting things, but they're not scary anymore. They're mostly CGI. The aliens in Alien 4, some of the action scenes work, but the aliens just don't have that menace anymore.
Yeah, at this point, we've kind of outgrown it.
That's gone. So we don't have anything else alien-wise, really, until Prometheus in 2012, and that's, of course, Scott coming back to it, but really protesting a lot originally up front. It's not an alien movie. It's not gonna. It just has alien DNA, which is a weird thing to say. But and I don't know. So he gets everyone to recalibrate their expectations for this movie that's really going to be about the bigger questions. Where did we come from? And where are we going? And how can I make an Alien sequel that's not an Alien sequel? Or prequel in this case. What did you think about Prometheus?
I'm one of the guys out there. I could see where the flaws are in the movie, but I still enjoy it for what it is. I think I like the hard sci-fi beginnings of it that you get a lot of just, you know, standard fun sci-fi stuff. Watching ships go through space and, you know,
glide silently through space. Yes. It's kind of a nice long shot. You don't get that.
Yeah, you get a lot of beautiful cinematography. I mean, like, talk about the opening sequence alone where they just kind of go over the planet at the beginning of Prometheus and you have that little weird scene with the engineer taking his poison or whatever. And lead you to believe maybe giving life to the planet or something.
Which kind of does restore that sense of the mystery I talked about. The mysterious, not just, oh, it's a mystery, what's happening, but the sense of the mysterious.
And then when it goes into full bore, like, horror territory, at that point I'm ready for it, and I like what they do with it. And yeah, it's kind of tied to Alien and kind of not, but I enjoy it for what it is. I like the whole thing package as a whole. I still think it's a fun experience. I mean, we rewatched it recently and I had a good time with it. I just think it's shot really well. It's entertaining. There's nothing particularly too offensive to me in it in terms of what they're doing with the franchise.
No, it's really, to me, Prometheus was a movie of two parts. Kind of a mixed bag. I'd say I still come out basically saying that I like it. It just kind of disappoints me because I could see makings or earmarks of kind of greatness and my anticipation so high. This is where, to me, Scott's put everything on the table to make a movie that could be, I mean, I don't believe it was in any way, but could be as good as the original Alien in its own way. It's a completely different movie. Not that we would compare them and say, oh, this is just like Alien, but rather the pieces, the just saying that the materials were there. I don't think he even got remotely close to it. But, again, it feels very ambitious. I think the problem is the movie's so strong in those opening sequences. You were reminded what a good filmmaker Ridley Scott is. In those opening scenes where we meet David, and again, restores the android question.
Yes, it does.
Became kind of just an add-on in part 4 and part 3. And here, it goes back and he kind of gets it more that maybe this is the heart of the story. Or at least a large part of it, because the human beings are asking who created them, and David has to interact with everyone as a known created being, except his creators are right here in front of him every day, and they're looking for their creators. And all that stuff is kind of interesting. Well, it's not kind of interesting, it is interesting. Introduction to the crew, Idris Elba's there, he's cool, Charlize Theron. I do think this movie kind of breaks down when you start to get into the writing of it. Not so much plot points, but I really, Noomi Rapace is good as Elizabeth Shaw. I like Elizabeth Shaw's character. I like what they do with her. She's not Ripley. She's not supposed to be Ripley. She has a couple moments where she's put in scenarios where she can rise to the occasion like Ripley, but she's a fundamentally different character. And yeah, I'm okay with that. I like that they don't try to make her Ripley. They make her her own person, a person who wants to believe in something and is trying to pursue it in the midst of all these kind of horror things. The rest of the crew, for the most part, David aside, kind of suck to me. Like, they're just throwaway characters. There are two guys in particular, like the navigator and the xenobiologist, who at one point dismiss themselves so they can leave the ancient alien pyramid thingy and go out, and the navigator can't get them back, and the xenobiologist decides to pet a creepy flower monster, and tragedy ensues. But I felt like the alien pyramid, the engineers and their experiments, and the idea that maybe they created us and now maybe they decided they were also going to wipe us out, it's all kind of a red herring in some ways, even in this movie, because eventually we just get to, it's going to be about mucky monsters popping out of you and flopping around the ship and doing their thing. And even when we get to the engineers, when we get that moment where we meet the engineers, they prove to be equally as aggressive, at least the one that we meet is. And then it becomes a, we gotta save the planet, sci-fi style thing. That's just not the most interesting version of that story. But you gave me the first half of that story, and when everything wraps up, once I've patiently gone through your little dog and pony show of alien creatures. Then we have Elizabeth Shaw and David. They get on the ship and they're going to go see the engineer homeworld, and they're going to find out what the, we're really going to get the movie that Prometheus said it was going to be. You'll have to wait for it. And honestly, I didn't really expect it ever to get made, to be perfectly honest.
Well, in ways it hasn't.
Well, we'll get there. But so my bottom line of Prometheus, I think it's an okay movie. It has great shots. It has great scenes. Entire scenes are great. It has great intentions. The Fassbender David character is pretty fascinating. I don't think they delve into him deeply in this movie. Elizabeth Shaw's character is not delved into. But I was okay with that because I felt we will get there. And so now, I think this is the point where we're going to break out of our spoilers. So I think we're saying we've enjoyed it to some extent, every Alien movie.
Yeah.
I don't think that we felt that any of them met their potential the way Alien and Aliens did. And it was nice to have Scott come back to the series and the franchise, but I didn't feel that what we got wasn't what we hoped we'd get when we knew that Scott was coming back to the franchise.
True.
I mean, I think regardless, and a lot of that was to me down to story. It wasn't Scott's direction. It wasn't a lack of creatures looking good. It wasn't a lack of acting. It was a lack of the story being appropriately strong. You know, the very first thing you should have before you go into the studio is a good script, and I don't think they had that. So, at this point, we're going to do Alien Covenant. What we're going to do is do a very brief, like, spoiler-free review. Chris and I will give our points, and then we're going to go into spoilers, because I think we're going to need to.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Alien Covenant. Chris, take us away.
Well, again, like Prometheus, I mean, it starts off with this cool sci-fi intro. Again, not really anything related to even any aliens or anything. Just people in a ship trying to survive out in space. We have a nice big colonist ship filled with, like, thousands of colonists and embryos. Heading off to a distant planet to begin life there as humans. I just thought that interesting first 20 to 30 minutes of it really sold it to me as, like, this could be a really great movie. Now, I don't think it ever going up to the great direction. It kind of takes a turn from my expectations because, like you with Prometheus, I was expecting a certain story I thought we were going to get. And they had some little prologue clips that kind of led you to believe you get a little more of David and Shaw's story on the engineer world. And I thought we were going to delve into that more a little more deeply than they do. We do see David again at a certain point in the movie. And they all kind of, they land on the planet to seek out what song was it again? Some kind of a...
Take Me Home, Country Road, by John Denver.
So there's just like a freak moment. Actually, pretty intense scene where this guy's seeing this like weird frequency message going across the screen. He can't see what's in front of him. And so they have to go find it. And that's when it kind of takes a turn to a little more traditional territory for this franchise, if you will.
The alien name right up front this time.
Yeah, they were honest about it. They're like, hey, we're going to have aliens in this one. Deal with it. So I kind of tempered my expectations once the shift kind of came. And this happened to me in Prometheus a little bit, too, where, you know, it started going more towards horror territory. And I kind of realized I wasn't going to get the movie I was looking for. I enjoyed myself with it. I'm not going to say it was a great movie, but I think if you're an Alien fan, much like if you were a Jason fan and you're going to see the 13th film or whatever, you know, you're just going to see this franchise that you like, see some mayhem ensue, and just sit back and have a good time, turn off your brain. Unfortunately, I didn't really want that going in, but I ended up getting there eventually in my own head as the movie progressed.
We're at an interesting kind of crossroads here because you're like the statement, if you're an Alien fan, I think you're going to enjoy this going in. But the question becomes, since it is kind of fundamentally attempting to be a different movie, what if you're a Prometheus fan? What if the last shots of Prometheus have you really jazzed about the engineers and why they made us and what's going to happen? And will Elizabeth Shaw find her answers? And what will become of David? And what will he think when he's confronted with the truth about the engineers?
And the brief glimmer of that you get in the prologue, little like 2-minute prologue.
Do you think a Prometheus fan who felt that Prometheus was headed in a direction that was maybe up and above Alien a little bit, not above quality, but
in a different, more thoughtful, not turn off your brain, well, they do you think they'll be satisfied?
No, not at all.
Okay.
That's, I think, I would love to see that, you know, that second Prometheus.
Do you not believe that's what they were leading us? They were leading us
towards. They definitely led us towards that, but that's not ultimately what they were going to deliver. I mean.
No, because it isn't. No, you're right. So, I struggle with the two halves that will still love always to see a good alien movie.
Yes.
When the aliens chasing people, whatever. But feeling, again, that I only got kind of half of what I wanted Prometheus, and then the promise being we're going to get this in the next movie. And this my views on Alien Covenant, which we'll get to a little bit more more extensively in the spoiler section, some of my issues I have with this movie aren't simply because I didn't get that thing that I wanted. It's because the thing that I did get didn't sufficiently distract me from the thing that I wanted, which there have been many movies I've walked into that, wow, this is not what I was expecting. But I'm going to go with it. I mean, Alien Resurrection, ultimately, you had a good time, even though it wasn't what you thought you were getting into. You know, mm-hmm. So sometimes you go into a movie and you're like, well, this is not what I was expecting, but okay. Alien Covenant is exceptionally well made by Scott. Mm-hmm. It's probably the movie that has the most earmarks of his traditional directing and style and the skill that he can bring to a movie. It's the most that's been on display since Kingdom of Heaven in 2005.
Yeah, I mean, Kingdom of Heaven looks gorgeous. Scott, I mean, it does look good.
It looks great. Yeah. His skill is there. The very first sequence of this movie, without going too much, is not even the people on the ship. It's a very small sequence that harkens back to David.
Yeah.
And I had mentioned, you know, maybe when we did our summer preview, you know, well, maybe we'll get a movie that proves that David was more the main character than anybody else. You know, maybe this is going to be David's trilogy or whatever. And in a lot of ways, I don't think I was wrong about that. I don't know if I was right about it in the way I wanted to be right about it. But Scott cares, obviously, a great deal about the David character in terms of where his themes and ideas lie. And I think that is borne out here. Fassbender's great. He has two different androids in this movie. And I think he's good as both of them. The crew is good and solid. I also feel like a lot of their interactions, and including Danny McBride, they are a callback more to the way the initial crew of the first Alien movie
absolutely
interacted. Yeah. This is far more fluid and far more honest feeling than the characters in Prometheus. You know what I also really thought was cool, and this is not really a spoiler, they're going to colonize this planet, and not just biologically, I don't think it's done just for biological purposes, but also for purposes of community and nurture, almost everybody's a couple on that ship. What that does is it kind of builds in that when bad things start to happen, there's a very good reason people start to make irrational decisions or have to fight against making irrational decisions, because on the other side of that problem is their spouse or loved one who's in danger. And I thought that they handled that really well, particularly something with the Catherine Waterston character and how really right from the beginning of the movie she's in a position where she's kind of a little bit different, and that enamors her a little bit more to Walter, who is the Fassbender android. And I thought all their interactions were great. When they get to this planet where the distress signal, like you said, is handled in a really creepy kind of, that's again that mystery sort of way, like that was a callback almost like to the original Alien, just the spookiness of McBride just seeing that pop up in his helmet, and the loneliness of space is captured again, and a lot of practical effects work. So you're watching the first half of this movie, like you said, and it's building up this movie that feels awesome and mesmerizing. And even when the way the alien words come up is a callback to the original Alien, that kind of strange sense of mystery. And I'm just really 100% on board with this thing. And I'm watching this movie unfold. I'm like, he's going for it. He's going to go and he's going to make a movie that bookends like Alien with that kind of strength and like character, and we're going to get it. And then, like, man, there's a certain point when the bottom fell out bad for me, and I felt like the bucket of the roller coaster ride just dumped me, and I fell and smashed my head on the pavement and started crying, and no one had a lollipop. It was
or a refund.
And the reality is this movie isn't that bad all the way through, but everything we get after that was just not a consolation for what we don't get. And they really do. They really do in an almost very smug way, cavalier way. They just push aside the promise and the questions of Prometheus. They just take it and shove it off the floor, and like pulling, you grab the tablecloth and yank all the beautiful meal into the floor and let it collide. Mm-hmm. They do that with all the questions and all the promises of Prometheus fall on the floor. And Scott basically says, I was interested in a different question all along. And then it becomes a thriller. It ends in a place where I feel like I'm watching an alien chase people down a hallway, except at this point, I just don't care anymore. Because I feel like I'm still, my head is still stuck back on this element that is bait and switch. I think the bait and switch just is not effective. And so I never got my mind back around to enjoying mm-hmm. what they did. That's how I feel. Mm-hmm. I don't know if everyone's going to feel that way. I think it seems to be the consensus is that people are finding enough to say, hey, I like this better than Prometheus. I think this is a stronger film than Prometheus. My issues with aside, the fact I was a little more disappointed with it, it tries for more. It achieves more than
Prometheus. I think there's a lot of, another thing about it too that's cool is it gives you a lot of, it really helps you understand some of the motivations of David in Prometheus, actually. Like, in a little bit of insight into what he's doing. Because in that movie, he still was kind of vague, and his actions were a little vague at times. And I think this kind of puts a nice, gives you a nice understanding, I think. I think watching Prometheus again.
I think that'll be more discussion for the spoiler section. But, because I have a couple thoughts on that, and I'm not sure if it does. But it definitely does expand mm-hmm. The things he did
in and Prometheus. And it also does a nice job of giving homage to other, like, Alien and Aliens. A lot of callbacks, some interesting, like, even the inside the colony ship, they have all these, like, big machines and equipment for when they go colonize a planet. You see all these chains hanging and stuff. Reminds you very strongly of the first Alien movie you see. So I felt like it was a nice homage to that. And I've actually made the comparison. I think this is kind of like, I mean, two completely different series, but you have Star Wars, and you know how recently we had Star Wars The Force Awakens, and that kind of felt like, at times, a retread of A New Hope. I feel like this feels, at times, like a retread of some of the other movies. Like, it's kind of an homage, but at the same time, also, it's kind of stealing a little bit, a little borrowing going on. But I also liked Force Awakens, and I like this movie for what it is.
For me, Force Awakens did manage to kick into the spirit of Star Wars, which was why it was homaging, and so the homage worked. To me, at least that second half, when we start getting the aliens stalking people, it just didn't. I never felt the visceral excitement that came with Alien and Aliens. Like, it didn't. Whereas Force Awakens, some of the lightsaber sequences and just the scenes of the Force happening and the characters, I got into that. Part of me is saying, dude, this is the same movie they made in 1977, you know? But another part of me is just enjoying the ride, and I'm not discounting what you're saying. I wish I had your experience.
I feel they both were comparable.
But honestly, to me, I just didn't. All I'm saying is it didn't. The purpose of homaging something, the purpose of making something like that, it just never grabbed the excitement I had watching those movies. The last half of the movie, I really felt, and maybe I do need to see it again, because I felt like there was a just sitting there bouncing off of everything. And it was very frustrating, because that's not where I wanted to be seeing this movie. I didn't want to be sitting there observing it from on high. I wanted to be down there in the corridors with, you know, the characters as they do their thing. Mm-hmm. Now, that being said, I don't think you should avoid watching it, particularly if you're a fan of the franchise. I just think you should set your expectations accordingly. This is not as strong as the first two movies. This is absolutely a sequel to Prometheus, but it's taking that entire series in a different direction.
Totally different, yeah.
What it seemed to be promising. So understand those things going in. This is not Alien 3. This is not Alien 4. This is not.
I think you'll enjoy it more if you have that understanding. Sure.
Yeah, but you know what? If you are disappointed by it, you are not alone. So with that, we'll just. And I don't want to spoil everything here, but I think for anyone who's seen the movie who maybe just wants to wrestle and chew with it a little bit more, let's take a couple minutes to do that, Chris.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Because I don't always like to be 100% negative. Sometimes I do. But
usually that's my job.
Some of the things, I'll talk about some stuff I really liked. I love that the first shot of this movie is essentially, in construction and composition, the same shot as the first shot of Blade Runner, which is an eye. Now, and we don't really know who we're looking at in the original Blade Runner. We see the eye, and it's reflecting stars, and seems to be reflecting the cityscape. And we're not sure whose eye we're looking at. Are we looking at Roy Batty's eye? Are we looking at Deckard's eye? And the first shot of this movie is the eye of David. As we kind of come in, and we realize that what we're watching is the very first moment that he's become aware. And that moment with his creator, which I thought was a great scene.
I did too. I thought it was cool.
A great scene that sets up and reiterates... Mind you, reiterates the question of who are we alone, and why do human beings want to find their creator? And it kind of turns out that once they get to that planet and they find David, who has, it seems like Elizabeth Shaw has sent the distress signal, but we kind of learn that from everything I can interpret that it is indeed David. So they go to the planet, they meet these monsters that are reminiscent of the aliens, but closer to the thing that climbs out at the end.
Proto-aliens or something. Proto-aliens.
We learn, which is we kind of did in the promo, that David does decide to unleash the weapons on the engineers, their own weapons, and decimate them.
Murder them all horribly.
Murder them all. Murder them all before we learn a single flipping thing about them at all, except that they seem to be excited that the ship is back. We don't see another engineer for the rest of the movie, not live anyway.
And by excited it's back, they're like people just in the streets, clapping their hands, screaming
with
joy.
We don't even have David...
Like, what? Why are they so excited about it?
We don't even have David make another mention of the engineers, of what they wanted. He doesn't talk about how it affected him at all. Shaw
Well,
is,
it wouldn't have.
Well, yeah, yeah, I get that. But, again, that's kind of a writing tool. Didn't affect him, so he doesn't have to say it. And, but you created this idea. You created this concept. I mean, I didn't make up the engineers. I didn't decide to tell the story of the engineers. That was Ridley Scott's idea.
Yeah.
So then to blow them up, isn't that dissimilar? And to kill Elizabeth Shaw with no screen time in this movie is not removed at all from killing Newt and Hicks at the beginning of Alien 3.
That's
and
fair.
It was did almost to me the same exact thing. Now, in that... We get a hint of what happened to Shaw, which is a horrible thing. It seems that David's been experimenting on lots of different things, including Elizabeth. We don't know the circumstances, whether she was infected and he did this, or he's just a complete loon, which he seems to be. And he's eventually found a way to create the eggs, which makes me wonder if Scott isn't getting back to the idea that the creation of the eggs is something that can happen biologically without the need for a queen. Perhaps the way that David has created the eggs is similar to what happens on the ship in the Nostromo in the original Alien. So, all of that stuff is kind of interesting, the way it ties in. When we find that David is essentially, or has always been, malevolent, meaning he tells Walter that he loved Elizabeth. We really don't know if that's true or not. It could be in his own twisted mind. But we're led to believe through kind of when, at a certain point, David just reverts to being the big bad.
The mad thing, scientist.
Yeah, yeah, but almost not even that, because he's almost like the Bond villain. You know, the things he says are, I'm going to do to her what... I'm going to do to you what I did to her. You know, those are like classic bad guy things coming out of his mouth. It's better to reign in hell than serve in heaven or whatever. You know, all those sorts of little quotes that have been trotted out all the time. At that point, I lose sight of him as being this interesting, creepy, strange figure who has been so distorted by this question of creator creation that he's observed in the human beings. And Scott doesn't seem to be interested in where do we come from, who created us. He seems to be more interested in why do humans care so deeply about who created them? Why are they always asking this question? Does it distort them as it's distorted David? Because all David wants to be is a creator, but all he kind of ends up being is a destroyer. But he does create the aliens, and one of the alien raises his arms up, and I thought he was going to pull out a top hat and a cane and dance across. That was a stupid scene. That got laughs in the theater we were in. Of course,
the whole movie got laughs because we were
laughing all the way through it. There were a lot of visual callbacks to the scene where David kisses Walter is very similar to the scene where Roy Batty kisses Terrell in Blade Runner, where he's greeting his creation. This is a little different, but the concept's kind of there.
Basically, it's the same crowd who would never bother to read Lord of the Rings And just at the scene with Sam and Frodo, like at the end, he's like,
oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they're all like, oh, those guys are clearly gay. It's like,
this
no,
was
it's
your
a bond
like
of brotherhood.
Bottom barrel action movie crowd, and they still couldn't get on board with
yeah.
this. And it's not that lofty. There's a lot of great slower moments, too, where we see David kind of trying to perfect the music, and he's playing the theme from Prometheus. But he says these things, I've made this as a love song, you know, this is my song for Elizabeth. There seems to be something legitimate there. He seems to see that legitimacy in Walter. Walter's a character that is just becomes a throwaway plot point, too. We're developing him, and he's used for this twist, which is not a twist.
It's
I
not.
I mean, you
yeah.
and I must have to agree it's not a twist. I'm not sure that Scott saw it as a twist, but he extends it for so long that the false notion that it's not going to end up like that almost makes some of them, kind of to me, personally, put a wet blanket on the action towards the end of the movie, because I'm watching them fight the alien, which mm-hmm. should be thrilling, and I'm like, he's just going to come over at the end, you know, that David is just going to, Walter's going to reveal himself to be David, and we're going to get a bad, you know, the unhappy ending, and he's going to win, so why am I, do I care whether they beat or don't beat the alien? If they had dealt with that in a different way, and maybe he still overcomes
that. I think that is the greatest weak point of the movie, honestly.
It's, and it's
is
huge,
that
really,
huge
coming in
that, like,
into that
twist. You
yeah,
know, like,
and that they still try to play it straight. And I don't even mind that that's what he does. I don't mind that they reveal that David, that David trying to connect to his humanity makes him worse instead of better. I'm okay with that. I don't even necessarily...
Because that would show his true humanity.
I don't even necessarily care that he kills Shaw. It's just that... In doing that, they completely throw that stuff on the table. And here's the thing. I think Ridley Scott said, oh, I still want to make that movie. Then if that's the case, what, like, you're just putting it all, you know, to keep pushing back
yeah.
what people want to see. You're still acknowledging, that's the movie I should have made. When you do this, that's what you're saying. This is still the movie I should have made. Mm-hmm. And if the director thinks that, then why am I sitting here watching The Alien, which is now as scary as a rabid kitten, to me.
Because I enjoy that rabid kitten. That's
fair.
Why.
He looks great. She, it, whatever, looks great. It scrabbles around. It climbs up the wall. The shower scene where it's behind the glass and kind of pressing itself against the glass is very creepy.
Yeah.
Creepy. It doesn't get to the point of scary, but it's creepy. It's a nice image. I like Danny McBride in the movie. I actually thought
surprisingly,
Danny
yeah.
A, and I thought, the, but that was also, that illustrated one of the weak points of Covenant in the second half. He never did any, I mean, I liked him, but he never got a big rooting moment. You know, he never got that kind of moment that Ripley gets when she blows the alien out of the airlock mm-hmm. in the first movie, or when she fights with the loader. And he and Catherine Washington, their moment of triumph just doesn't have that zing. Maybe mm-hmm. because, like you and I know, we're getting the other shoe dropping, and what they're mm-hmm. doing doesn't matter. Because David's just going to, you know,
yeah.
mess everything up. But David's madness could have been a very... Like, when they're looking through those Geiger-esque drawings and they're seeing, like, what he potentially did to Elizabeth Shaw, mm-hmm. and we get the level of what has been happening to him, and not just on that planet, but since he became operational, and we realize there's a lot of deep, dark stuff going on there. That could have been a very fascinating, almost Frankenstein-like
yeah.
movie. Scott could have made this... his Frankenstein, which Frankenstein's always been kind of under the roots of Blade Runner. It's been under the roots of Alien. It's been under the roots of the android problem,
mm-hmm.
the whole series. And now he's getting at the root that this movie is David's movie. It is the next movie will have to deal with David in some fundamental way.
Oh, yeah.
And I think he still robs David of the movie in some ways because of his decision to make the lack of Prometheus conclusion so prominent in here. Because he relies so much of it on a twist, he relies so much of it on action scenes, instead of resolving who David is, we still don't really know. I mean, we have a very... If the answer is he's just a crazy dude now, or he's a crazy android, that's far less interesting than what he seems to be implying through some of those scenes.
Yeah, he does. He does try to take care with David and what he's building with David, but it really ultimately at the end of the day just feels like your garden variety mad scientist.
So you know what this feels like? This is probably the best metaphor I can think of. I feel like I go to somebody's house and they've built up and touted this great big meal, and I'm like, okay, and they've talked about it for like forever. So I get there and then I find cheeseburgers waiting for me on the table, like McDonald's cheeseburgers. And I start eating the burger and I'm like, you know what though? This isn't bad. It's pretty good. And then I see in the other room that they cooked all this food and they just threw it in the trash.
Yeah.
And it's laying there like 50 feet from me in the trash can. And they've opened the door just enough so I can see it. And now my cheeseburger really tastes like crap.
I guess that's fair, honestly.
No, I'm not saying you have to feel, but I'm just trying to extend to you how I felt. That was like how I felt.
I can understand feeling like that because I felt like that with Batman versus Superman.
I knew that was going to come up.
That, yeah, I mean, like, I can understand that sentiment 100%. I enjoyed what we got, but yeah, you're right. I mean, it's not the movie I wanted to see either.
I really don't have a lot of energy left to watch. I will watch another one, but I don't need to see anymore, really, me personally. Mm-hmm. Like, and I'm a little, although I don't think I want to see Neil Blomkamp direct it, if this movie killed the next Alien movie of Sigourney Weaver, I think that's a shame.
I think you're right, because I would love to see another Alien with Sigourney Weaver. Whatever way they choose to do it, it certainly would have to be in between.
You know what, Ridley Scott? Don't make another movie in this series. Just get Sigourney Weaver and make another Alien movie. Have her be a clone of a clone of a clone. I don't care. Just do it. And maybe find a way to get David in there, too. You know?
Yeah.
Have fun. Time travel.
Time travel. All right.
So
here's the main question I have. Somewhere in between the end of Covenant and the beginning of Alien, Engineer must have survived somewhere because the Engineer had in his spaceship a bunch of alien eggs. So,
but are they the eggs? But they're not the same alien that David engineered, right? There are so many red herrings. So what was the thing at the end of Prometheus? What does that become?
I don't even know. Like, clearly, David had created the egg sack thing, from what I understand. So it has to have happened sometime. I don't. Who knows? Like, the timeline is all mishmashed at this point. Like,
it's smashed into junk.
Yeah. I don't know.
Turn your brain off indeed.
Yeah.
It sounds like...
Which is the opposite of what I would normally tell you to do.
It sounds like thumbs up and thumbs down, but I think Chris and I, in a lot of ways, our emotional reactions to the movie are different, but I think we mostly agree in the details of how the movie plays out.
Well, yeah.
Thankfully for you, you enjoyed it a lot more than I did. But I'm still not saying don't go see it. That may seem weird. I'm saying there's a good chance you might enjoy it just like Chris did. But if you don't, I'm here.
And don't blame you.
That's right. Okay, everyone, have a great night and take care.
Take care.
See ya.
See ya.